supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Eagles are in St. Louis for their season opener. Tomorrow they play the Rams at 1 o'clock. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's a frequently asked question that I'm surprised, quite honestly, we haven't answered before. What's up when circles and patches suddenly appear in a lawn? We'll tell you about some of the fungal organisms that cause these discolorations of turf and tell you how the right kind of turf care can prevent those diseases from showing up in the first place. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're going to take that heap and helping of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Joy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Joy. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
And where is Joy joyful?
Far northeast Philadelphia.
Okay, what can we do for Joy in the far northeast of Philly?
I have a small vegetable garden in my backyard, and on Saturday prior to Hurricane Irene, I checked everything out. I picked all the tomatoes that were kind of red.
Good.
And tied things up a little bit, and then Hurricane Irene came. Monday, everything looked fine, and yesterday, practically all my tomatoes have wilted and are dying. It looks like as if the first frost hit them.
Right. Okay. Now, are you growing in raised beds or flat ground?
Flat ground.
Okay. Do you know what would have saved your tomatoes?
Raised beds.
Yeah. See, I always grew in raised beds because that's what we were taught. When I worked at Rodale, even before I became the editor of Organic Gardening, was really make a separate gardening spot for your plants, raised above the surrounding soil. And the main reason was this would be a physical barrier to your compressing the roots of your plants by making these raised beds that were no wider than 4 feet. You had no excuse to tromp around the roots of your plants and compress the soil. And when plants grow in that loose soil, they really just flourish. But I guess it was Ivan, which may have been our last hurricane that started with the letter I. In my neighborhood, it was much worse than Irene. And we had a foot of water pouring down our little country road. And I looked out into my garden, bemoaning the fact that I knew everything was going to drown. It had just been standing water for 2 days. But I could see it was like Venice. It was like canals. The raised bed soil was just above the water line. And I could see that the raised beds had prevented my plants from becoming waterlogged. So your flat ground garden, you didn't have that protection. You didn't have that little seawall to help you out. Plus, there's no way you can avoid working around your plants and tromping the roots down with your feet, compressing the soil in a flat ground garden. So if you think about it, you had really made the roots already vulnerable, and then they probably sat underwater for a couple of days. But next year, I really think that if you install a couple of raised beds, and you know, in this fall is a perfect time to do it, knock out a couple of areas, make them 4 by 8, that's the best size, you know, as long as you follow the rule, not wider than 4 feet, because you don't want to step inside. Fill them with a mixture of compost and screen black topsoil. You will be able to weather droughts, floods, every possible cultural problem that nature will throw at you. Your raised beds will help your plants survive better. All you can do now, for instance, is not overreact. Don't be pruning the plants. Don't be feeding them.
I'm ready to pull them out, actually.
Give them, well, that's always up to you. Are you going to replant with something? Then it makes sense.
Well, I was thinking of, like, doing some lettuce, maybe, or
yes, but don't do it in flat ground. because obviously if you've been walking back there around your plants, the soil's compacted. If you want to pull out your tomatoes and you can knock out a raised bed, you can go to the major home stores, have beautiful raised bed kits now you can buy, 4x4 ones that you combine into 4x8 ones. You can do it in an afternoon and then start your lettuce and your spinach and maybe some pansies and get those fall crops in. And with them being in a raised bed, you'll also be able to protect them with floating row covers or very diaphanous fabric of your own into the winter time and get a longer growing time out of them. But let this be the nudge you need to build raised beds, because I'll tell you, my tomatoes got the same amount of rain and I didn't lose any plants. The only thing that happened is a couple of tomato cages got blown over that I hadn't staked hard enough.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, good luck. I know if you grow in raised beds, you won't be calling back with problems like this.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Fantastic.
And where are you fantastic, sir?
I'm fantastic in Newcastle, California.
Where is your Newcastle? Is it
about 30 miles northeast of Sacramento.
Oh.
Right in the foothills.
All right, I'm heading out now. I'm getting in the car.
Come on by.
That's it. I hope you got a guest room.
Sure.
All right, Robert, what can we do for you?
I'm looking to eventually design the ultimate vegetable garden, wondering what input and suggestions you might have for that. We have some property here, so we have about as much space as I'd need.
How hot are your summers?
Can get to 105.
That's what I'm thinking.
Usually in the mid to upper 90s.
Okay. What about the winters? How low do you go?
We'll get a couple frost days.
Yeah, but
for the most part, 40s and 50s.
You can grow mostly in the same season. The things that you'll be aware of if you wanted to get exotic is you should avoid long-term plants that have chilling requirements.
Okay.
You probably wouldn't do well with raspberries or, you know, the typical popular fruit trees like apples and peaches and blueberries. All these things require a certain number of chilling hours over winter. But I bet you probably have some citrus in your neighborhood, don't you?
We have world-famous mandarin orchards here.
Yeah.
Just down
yeah.
the street.
So were I you, I would always have a lemon tree in my backyard.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just fell in love with those in Southern California. And, you know, the lemons seem to grow bigger in backyards in Southern California than you ever see in a supermarket. Isn't yeah. it true?
I think so.
Yeah. Now, in terms of your vegetable garden, raised beds.
Yes.
Raised beds will give you all the options you want, and the nice thing about them is they're like Legos, a Lego house that you can live in instantly.
Okay.
Because right now, this is the perfect time to do it. You want to frame out some beds that are no more than 4 feet wide, but they can be as long as you want. You know, the typical size of an individual bed is 4x8 because it accommodates standard lengths of lumber.
Okay.
But if you don't mind walking around, there's no reason you can't do a 4 foot wide bed that's 30 feet long.
Okay.
And the idea of them never being wider than 4 feet is so that you will never step into them.
I see.
You're going to till up the soil once, you're going to improve it with lots of organic matter, and then after that, you're never going to step into that bed. You're only going to plant and harvest in it. So the soil will never get compacted. You'll never have to till it again. You have a nice cooling mulch on the surface of the soil. You'll never have to weed it. And because the garden itself will always be raised about a foot above the surrounding soil line, grass and other laterally growing weeds will never be able to invade it. So it's the kind of garden that really takes care of itself. You don't need me to tell you that you can grow salad greens, broccoli, and pansies all winter long and be harvesting them all winter long in a bed that you build now. I mean, you got plenty of time to sow lettuces and spinaches, and you got a garden, a salad garden, just begging you to hammer it together now and start using it right away. And then your winters are mild, so over the mild winter, you build a few more beds and make sure you have 2 feet of lane space
okay.
in between your raised beds. But this way, there's no rush. You're not trying to prepare this 100 by 100 square foot plot of ground and get it all ready. You do one bed at a time. You learn what you like about it. So people who struggle with their gardens, always weeding them, always tell, they really miss the point. The idea is to put all that work in up front, and then, as the great Ruth Stout once said, you garden from a lawn chair.
You now, as far as a border, is, can you make them out of, like, concrete?
Permanent raised beds of poured concrete are hugely popular.
Okay.
Your soils are naturally alkaline to begin with, but as long as you use high-quality concrete, you have it poured right, and you make sure there's good, rich, organic soil in the beds and lots of compost, I've seen it work spectacularly.
Okay.
That's a very popular thing to do in a cooler climate than yours, because the concrete or the stone heats up during the day and radiates back at night. But that's my advice. Build raised beds. Build them a few at a time. Go slow. Make sure you use your winter. You can grow year-round where you are. And you're going to do some of your best growing while I'm sitting inside throwing another piece of wood on the fire.
Thank you for your show. You're a plethora of information.
Well, I hope I continue to plethorize your life.
Take care.
Take care, man.
Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody that garlic planting time is here. So find a local source of garlic, like a local grower or farmer's market, not the supermarket, and plant individual cloves 6 inches deep and 6 inches apart in your loosest, richest soil, preferably soil where garlic hasn't been growing the past couple of years. Then just sit tight till next spring. But don't go breaking up those bulbs for your beds just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how you can avoid spots, patches, and circles appearing in your lawn. I'm Spotty and Patchy Mike McGrath, and we'll be right back with more of You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
Penswood Village, a Quaker-directed active senior living community, supports WHYY. Situated on 82 acres in Bucks County, Penswood Village offers residential, health, and community services designed to meet the needs of people over 65. Amenities include garden apartment living, type A all-inclusive life care, and a newly renovated community building. A green community, Penswood welcomes applications for future residency. For details or a tour, 888-455-4-1122 or penswood.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. Join us for the kickoff of WHYY's parenting series. Our topic is homework, September 13th at 6:30 p.m. here at WHYY. To register, visit whyy.org/member experience.
What does 9/11 mean to you? Where were you on that day 10 years ago? And what has changed in your life since then? Explore personal stories collected by WHYY and feel free to share your own. Visit whyy.org/after9/11.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, how to avoid circles, patches, and spots appearing in your lawn. The actual cause may be fungal, but the things you can do to prevent it are cultural. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, I'm so glad to be on your program.
I'm so glad to have you on my program, Karen. Where are you?
I'm in Ségur-le-Château, which is in southwest France.
Oh, excellent. Well, you've just raised the class level of this show, 100,000...
But I went to Penn.
University of Penn.
Yes, I did. And I went to the University of Pennsylvania.
And now you're in France.
I am.
And may I ask what took you to France?
I'm an architect, and I was looking for an unusual project to work on. And I Googled Castle France, and I found an old building.
And are you now architecting castles?
It's finished.
Oh, okay.
That was 6 years ago. So it's done, and I spend my life now gardening around the castle,
oh.
Which it isn't really. It's a very tiny, tiny medieval building.
Well, still, it sounds like you're living the dream here.
Yes and no, till I became invaded with frelons, which are Asiatic hornets.
Oh. And
the topic of our conversation.
And what are your hornets doing?
They are attracted so far only to raspberries. And I planted the raspberries about five years ago, and they do very well on a south-facing, well-drained slope. We get a lot of sun and a good bit of rain. And I have had a great crop since I put them in, and this is the first year. And they actually just showed up last week.
Oh, it won't
be. And I don't have other. I have a giant apple tree that the fruit's just coming on, but they don't seem to be there. And I have figs, but no figs on them yet. So they are hovering, dozens and dozens of them, amongst the raspberries.
This is no different than it's a very similar problem you would have had if you'd stayed in Philly.
Yes.
This time of year, yellow jacket colonies, which are a form of hornet, have built up to immense populations and are starting to realize they're not going to exist for much longer, and they go nuts for sugar. This is why, you know, it's not safe to drink a soda or a sweet tea outside this time of year, and soft fruit growers go nuts because the wasps are out there fighting us for every blackberry and raspberry and blueberry. They have not been as pestiferous of my peaches as I'm led to believe that they will be at some point, but eventually they'll go for your apples too, especially if you don't keep the orchard floor clean. Now, are these kind of real true hornets living in a big visible nest somewhere out in the open?
Well, we can't find the nest. An Asiatic hornet prefers a conifer if they can have them, and I have giant conifers. So
right.
To see very high up is quite difficult. So the nest is not in evidence. If it were, I would hire somebody to get rid of it. But we can't find the nest.
Right.
And I sat outside last night till about 9:30, and it isn't completely dark at 9:30, but they were still there, and B, the ones that were disappearing, there was no evidence as to which direction they were going to bed, shall we say.
You got to slap little GPS tracers on these things.
That's what we need.
Okay.
And I've tried this particular kind of hornet is attracted to meat,
mm-hmm.
and I've tried the meat lure. They've been eating up a good bit of our honeybee population, which is a problem. They arrived in France probably around 2004. And I've tried the traps where you put, you can put any kind of mixture in them. It's the kind where the bug flies up and can't fly down. So far, there's so much fruit, they're not interested in the trap mixture.
Well, you I've say
tried
now
all of those things, including nest decoys.
So you have put up things that look like hornets' nests.
I have.
And the hornets are undeterred.
They're not even a little bit. They just fly around them.
I'm led to believe that the commercially available ones, the ones that are professionally made to really look like hornets' nests, have
sort of more of a teardrop.
Have proven effective for some people. So for next season, you may want to see about buying some of these true imitation hornet's nests instead of just something that you hope they're going to receive as visually as looking like a nest. Now, this time of year, it is very true, hornets like yellow jackets, like your Asiatic hornets, are going to go for two different kind of foods. But you're talking about mixtures. So I'm wondering, have you put out something as simple and as dedicated? What I use are old quart jars that, like organic lemonade came in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're glass jars. They could be plastic with a metal lid. I take the lid off. I knock a hole, single hole through it with a Phillips head screwdriver. And then I use multiple jars. And in half the jars, I put old ham. I get some old sliced cheap ham and I let it go just slightly bad.
Okay.
And I put just ham in some of the jars. And then in the other jars, you want rotten fruit. You want peaches that are overripe, something that really has a strong smell.
So you're saying this is, because I tried the homemade solution that you find on the internet of cutting, getting the 2-liter plastic water bottle, for instance,
okay.
and you cut the top third off, and you take the top and invert it.
Yeah.
Taking the screw lid off, obviously, so you've created this situation where they fly down and can't get back up again. But you're saying that you'd take a 1 or 2 liter plastic bottle, leave the top on, and put a hole in the side?
Put a hole in the top, in the cap.
Oh, okay, put a hole in the cap.
And then inside each bottle is either stinky meat or stinky fruit, nothing else. Old ham seems to attract the most of the ones that are after protein. Second best seems to be the cheapest brand of cat food that you can buy. And in the other type, for the ones that are really after sugar, it would be a really stinky, aromatic, overripe fruit. Again, like a peach.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is to get some old window screening and actually bend it and surround large clusters of berries so that, but you can't let the screening touch the berries or they'll actually eat the berries through the screening. But think about ways that you might be able to screen them out with cheesecloth, window screening, anything that breathes a little bit so the berries don't get moldy, but that doesn't have big enough openings for the wasps to get through. And then, like bird netting, you make sure it doesn't actually touch the fruit. And the final thing, and here's a question from an ignorant American for you. Do you have electricity handy?
Not that handy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, one could attach cords to cords and get electricity out there. I mean, we do on the property, but it's, you know, a distance from where the plants are.
It sounds like you'd blow up the light bulbs of neighbors for miles around.
Would we be electrocuting them? Is that the option?
No, not electrocuting them, but sucking them up with a shop vac vacuum cleaner that you would then...
Ooh, I like that.
Yes. And, you know, some of these... You can actually buy, like, cordless ones that work on rechargeable batteries.
Yeah.
And then you can go out and you can take these little suckers on head-to-head. You can actually just, while they're hovering over your fruit, you can hover over them, turn the vacuum on. And you did go to the University of Pennsylvania, so you would know to trash-talk them as they go down the tube into the bag.
And then, may I ask, how long do you wait to empty it?
You leave it out in the sun for a day, and that takes care of it.
And they cook.
Yeah, and you just make sure you duct tape up the hole before you do that so they can't fly back out.
It's kind of an inverse leaf blower.
Exactly.
Great.
Okay, so those are like 4 or 5 options. I think if you get the traps right, you'll get some with them. I think large clusters, it might be easiest to wrap. And then think about sucking some of them to their doom, if nothing else, for your personal satisfaction.
Oh, yeah. That sounds very amusing.
All right. Well, good luck, Karen, and enjoy your Provençal lifestyle there.
Thank you. I will email back the results. How's that?
Excellent. Excellent. You should always have great raspberries.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good. Ken, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, thank you very much for making it. Where are you, sir?
In Levittown, Pennsylvania.
The second Levittown, the one they built after New York.
That's right, yes.
All right. What can we do for Ken in the land of Levitt?
Mike, I was thinking about putting some landscape stone up against the house. I have strawberry there, about 4 feet from the house. Not a lot, but a couple of boxwoods, some azaleas. Crepe myrtle, and I was reading where that, like, the red tipple landscape stone is actually a form of lime, which I didn't think would probably be very good for the acid loving plants. So I was kind of wondering what your opinion of that was, using that one fabric with different kind of landscape stone.
Well, I can tell you 3 things already. That first, weeds, the worst weeds, the grassy weeds, love the protection of landscape fabric. You see, you know, they call it weed fabric,
mm-hmm.
because I think it was invented by weeds to protect them. because you know if you've examined this stuff up close, you see it's got little holes in it for water and air to pass through.
It has to.
Well, if you think about growing some sort of protection for grassy weeds that would prevent them from ever being pulled up, you couldn't come up with a better fabric than landscape fabric. So, and grassy weeds are the worst enemy of the gardener. I will tell you the same phenomenon occurs with stone as well. When people put these stones down thinking they're going to mulch once and be done for the rest of their lives because the stone will outlive them. Man, these weeds know how to use those stones. It's like they're pulling the stones down. Every time you try to pull the weed, the stone is running its roots under, the weed is running its roots under more of the stones, and it is virtually impossible, whereby when you have a nice organic mulch on the surface, you can wet it, the weed is not protected, the root system is not protected, and then when you wet the area and pull slowly at the base, the weed has to come out, cursing you all the way. You're absolutely correct in that azaleas and other acid-loving plants do not, sometimes they don't react well to growing near, like concrete, like a walkway, or even brick. But if your stone that you were considering is a form of limestone, of course it's going to alkalize the soil as opposed to acidifying it. So your best mulch for azaleas and similar plants is an inch of peat moss covered by an inch of compost. I know people have a hard time believing that compost actually prevents weeds, but in a 3-university study, 2 inches of blackyard waste compost prevented weeds just as well as 2 inches of dyed black shredded wood mulch. So, and of course, when you put down the peat moss, you're acidifying the soil. The compost is all the food the plants need. Then you get to go home and you'll have a wonderful blooming show. The other thing I want to point out, which is so important, and I'm so glad you specified, you said you were going to run the stones right up to the house.
Right.
That is building an I-95. That's an expressway for termites.
Oh, okay.
You always, and this is the thing that people don't understand, this mulching madness that has swept the nation is ill-advised in so many ways. But the only thing termites need to get to your house is for the soil to be covered with something that keeps it dark and moist. It doesn't have to be wood. I mean, if it's wood mulch, then you're feeding them as they work their way to your frame.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be low enough. I have no intention of using the wood mulch.
But even stones will keep that soil nice and moist, and that's all they need. Believe it or not, the best way to protect your house against termites is not to have a chemical trench filled outside your house. It's just to have an open foot of dry ground all around. It's like kryptonite to them. They cannot cross over dry ground. They just can't do it. Matter of fact, if you've ever seen termites in your part of the world, you see when they finally have to come above ground, maybe like to make the final foot to framing, they'll build mud tubes like mud dauber wasps to protect themselves because they can't come out into the open. So never run any mulch completely up against a house. Now with your kind of plantings, pine needles, pine straw sounds like it would be an excellent choice for you. Very decorative, good weed preventer. I tend to use an inch of compost around my disease-prone plants, lilacs, roses, things like that. But then all my other plants, that's why God knocks those leaves down and drops them at my feet every fall. He knows how dense I am, but if I see them laying there, I know there's a use for them. I suck them up with a leaf blower set on reverse. It shreds them. And then instead of doing anything else with them, like blowing them back and forth on the driveways between neighbors' houses, I just empty the bag right on the beds. And that leaf mulch is the best mulch. It's better than anything you can buy. leaves in many ways, that fall leaf is the tree's way of preventing undergrowth. Trees use their fall leaves to outcompete other plants. They're bullies in every sense of the word. They steal nutrients with their roots. They use their leaves to smother competing plants. You have to be good to grow under a tree. But when we shred the leaves, we make them a perfect mulch. And as I think you were just about to say, over the course of the year, as the mulch breaks down, they're releasing all those fabulous nutrients to your garden plants. And I guarantee you, man, 2 inches of well-shredded leaves is impenetrable to weeds, but lets all the rain and air through that your plants need.
That sounds great.
And it's free.
Nothing wrong with that. I got plenty of leaves.
But your instincts are right. The stone and the landscape fabric is a bad idea 3 different ways.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about the landscape fabric also. You know, like anything else seems too good to be true. That's why I figured I'd talk to the expert.
All right. Well, I'm sorry we couldn't have one for you, but I'm glad to have spoken with you, Ken.
It was a great talking to you, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Bye-bye now.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of our overplanted listeners that Philadelphia's Philabundance and similar food banks across the country would love to receive donations of your extra homegrown goodies to help feed the hungry. You can find the food bank near you by visiting the Feeding America website or simply by typing food bank in your location into your favorite search engine. But don't go tallying up your tomato tender just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and what's going on when spots, circles, and patches appear in your lawn. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY, 1138, 78 degrees in Center City.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. I'll host a fundraiser for the folks who green up the historic Fairhill Burial Ground on Sunday, September 18th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the University Barge Club on beautiful Boathouse Row. Then on Saturday, September 24th, I'll get you ready for the second season of gardening with a talk on garlic, pansies, fall greens, and more at 1:30 at the Lower Gwynedd Country Picnic in Penn Lynn Woods at Penn Lynn Pike and Township Line Road. The Great Chili Pepper Festival runs until 6 p.m. today in Bowers, PA. And the Scott Arboretum's 2001 plant sale will take place September 16th to the 18th. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Later today on Fresh Air Weekend, firefighters Ken Haskell and Jay Jonas tell their September 11th stories. That's at 1 o'clock. And then at 2, join us for a special edition of This American Life, in which we revisit people who've been on the show previously, whose lives were significantly touched by the 9/11 attacks. And then at 3 today, it's Living 9/11, part of our sister station in New York, WNYC's Decade 9/11 coverage, all here on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Beth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it, Beth. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Good, good. And where is Beth well?
In Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
Very good. What can we do for Beth in Downingtown, PA?
I had, in the beginning of June, a huge silver maple removed from my front yard.
Oh, how come?
It was overgrown. It was doing damage to the sewer main. We had already had to replace that.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just not healthy.
No, I can, and you were mad at it. Now, had you realized before that you were responsible for that drain going from your house out to the sewers?
Well, you know, it's so funny. You know, we had moved into the house, and it wasn't 6 days before it started to back up into the basement, and we had to dig it up, and we discovered what was going on. And despite all that, we're sorry to see the tree go,
right.
But it's gone. And I want to replace it with a plum tree.
Okay.
And I'm curious, how long do I need to wait before I can put my new tree in? And what, you know, should I do to my soil to make sure my new tree gets off to a good start? Because the roots left behind by this maple are crazy.
Oh, okay. So you did not have the stump pulled.
We had it ground.
Right. Yeah, that's become very popular. That's kind of the worst of two worlds. You realize that, you know, you left a plug in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it might as well be concrete. So the basic answer is never.
Oh, okay.
Not in your lifetime will you be able to plant something in the spot where that other tree once grew. You can try to find some openings far away from the side, but it's going to take some detective work to see what was the girth of the maple.
I certainly couldn't have gotten my arms around it. I would say it might have been 3.5 feet in diameter.
But you say you could not completely hug it and touch fingers.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You got a monster root system in the ground. That's why, you know, I don't think in the 13 years we've been on the air, a single person has ever called me beforehand. They've always had the stump ground down, and then they call and tell me all their extravagant planting plans that they're going to put into this concrete surface. And the sad part, of course, is once you have the stump ground down to where you can't see it anymore, they don't even have anything to grab onto if you want to change your mind and actually have it pulled. But
right. It
also sounds like your situation, if you had it pulled, it would have done more damage to the piping, right?
Yeah.
The other part that you probably don't want to hear, you ready for the part
okay.
two? Is you're probably going to have suckers coming up next season from the root system that was left in the ground.
Okay.
And mushrooms.
As
the environment tries to break down the stump and the roots, fungal bodies will appear above ground. Typically very nice mushrooms, harmless mushrooms, not edible, not poisonous, not nothing. They're just hanging around trying to turn.
I've already started to notice that.
See, how good am I? That's, you know, once every 100 times I can even anticipate. Now, obviously, if you want to plant a tree somewhere else on the property, I'll walk you through that real quickly.
Because
it's a good time of year. This is the perfect time of year to plant a tree. Go to your local garden centers, see what they have kind of left over or what they don't want to overwinter. You'll be able to make the deal of a lifetime. And trees planted at this time of year have a much better survival rate than trees planted in the spring.
Okay.
No matter what anybody else tells you, dig a wide hole, not a deep one. Make sure the tree is planted so that it is not too deep in the ground. You need to see the root flare, not a lollipop. And no matter what you read online, just refill the hole with the native soil you took out of it. Otherwise, your root system will stay in the improved soil. Plant high in bad soil in the fall. Water well afterwards. Make sure the tree doesn't dry out. If a winter is dry and spring starts hot, make sure you water it as if it was newly planted, and you'll have the best-looking tree on the block at half price. Now, for where your stump was, I do have an idea for you. Build a raised bed frame over top of where the stump was. Fill it with nice soil, half compost, half screen black topsoil, and then grow annual flowers in that. After a couple of years of growing annuals out there, you will have started to decompose those roots and that old trunk system, that old root system underground, so well that then you can start looking at different perennials, azaleas, things like that.
Okay.
Of course, you'll tell everybody you've been planning this for years.
Sure, yeah, it was all in the works. Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate that.
All right, Beth, you have good luck there.
Thanks again.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I'm from Howell, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. What can, and your name is Mike as well, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. What can,
well, thought of putting in these raised beds. I put in about six of them, and a couple of them I covered with the black plastic and cut holes in it and put tomatoes in it. And I remember you saying something about the black plastic wasn't good.
As you know, this year, Mike, we've had a very hot season. Black plastic is going to heat up directly exposed to the sun. It's going to cook the roots of your plants. The second thing I don't like about using plastic as a mulch is it doesn't last. It starts to shred and fall apart, and then you have the soil filled with all these shards or shreds of plastic, which are probably leaching chemicals into your soil, which kind of negates the role of an organic raised bed system. And also you get none of the benefits of an organic mulch like shredded leaves, which would keep the soil cool for your tomatoes and other plants and encourage earthworms to move in and live underneath the shredded leaves. You know, the black plastic can prevent rainwater from getting to the tomatoes. None of the benefits of an organic mulch feeding the plants and encouraging earthworms. It will fall apart. And this summer, it clearly heated up the roots of your tomatoes too much.
Yeah, that sounds very, very logical.
I know.
A little question I had about tomatoes. I noticed some of them are getting a little black blight on the bottom part of them.
Well, you're lucky that that's not blight. That is blossom end rot, which is caused by uneven watering. Now, when you planted the tomatoes, did you give them any calcium? Did you put any crushed eggshells in the hole or use any other...
I put lime down.
Oh.
Garden lime.
Why'd you do that?
Because we got very acidy soil here, and sandy, acidy soil.
Well, I'm not a big fan of lime, but that should have made some calcium available to your tomatoes. I'll tell you what, man, pull up your black plastic mulch. It is clearly preventing water from getting to your tomatoes in an even way. Yeah. I would still take like a dozen Tums or calcium carbonate supplement pills. Put them in a watering can full of water. Let them sit for an hour to dissolve, and then I would water your tomatoes with that calcium-rich liquid.
Right.
Get rid of the tomatoes that have the rot on the bottom now because they're not going to get any better. But the good news is it's not a disease. It's a cultural problem, kind of like opera. And when you solve the culture problem, the next run of tomatoes should be fine. So get that plastic off there. Give the tomatoes some calcium, and you shouldn't see any blossom end rot. This winter, save up all your eggshells, and when you plant your tomatoes next year, put a dozen crushed, dried eggshells in the bottom of every hole. That'll counteract the acidity. You'll never see blossom end rot guaranteed, and your tomatoes will taste better.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All Mike, right, Mike, good luck.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Circles and patches in lawns. Our thoughtful question this week comes from Matt in Arlington, Virginia, who writes, I reseeded my lawn last fall with Kentucky bluegrass, and it looked beautiful until early June, when I started noticing circular spots that turned brown, then gray, and then black. It's spread, and approximately three-quarters of my lawn is now completely dead. It's not dormant, it's dead. I've done a considerable amount of research and know that Kentucky bluegrass is difficult to grow here because of the harsh conditions. Although I have not had my grass tested, I'm fairly confident it has a fungus based on my research. Although I realize it could possibly be other things like insects or poor drainage. But all I want to know is whether it's possible to completely eliminate fungus in the soil, and if so, how? Well, it may be all you want to know, Matt, but it may not be the answer to your problem. To quote our turf grass advisor, Dr. Nick Christians of Iowa State University, lawn diseases can be difficult to identify. Many, especially the patch diseases, look much the same. And, as you yourself note, the symptoms are often the same as those caused by things like insect damage and poor lawn care. So any, quote, confidence you have in a fungal villain might not be shared by the experts. Now, there are several good organic disease fighters available, like the organism Bacillus subtilis and products derived from harpin proteins. But nothing will ever, quote, completely eliminate fungus in the soil. First, a lot of soil fungi are beneficial to plants. You don't want to eliminate them. And two, when a bad disease is the problem, the organism responsible tends to be ubiquitous in the local environment. It's also all around. So if something you're doing, hint, hint, is weakening the grass, hint, hint, and making it susceptible, there's always going to be a felonious fungal spore nearby to take advantage of that weakness. Oh, and your bluegrass is no harder or easier to grow than any other turf in the D.C. area. Your location in the heart of the transition zone is just a tough place to have a nice lawn, period. That makes proper lawn care even more essential, as the weather will stress your turf, and anything you do to stress it further could push it over the edge into illness. Now, let's take a look at some of the diseases that cause discolored circles or patches to appear in turf. With an eye towards the lawn care practices that can help prevent your ever having to look at little crop circles and play guess the disease. First up are the leaf spots, of which there are several kinds. Grass blades turn brown, either light, dark, and/or reddish brown, in irregular patches. Close inspection of the blades may reveal distinctive little spots. It's worst on Bermuda grass and common, that means cheap, Kentucky bluegrass. Newer named varieties of bluegrass are often specifically designed to be resistant to these diseases. Ah, but the biggest causes are overfeeding, thatch, which is caused by overfeeding, so that's redundant, and watering your lawn in the evening. Next up, the patch diseases. These include the delightfully named necrotic ring spot, yellow patch, summer patch, and fusarium blight. All display a frog's eye appearance. That's rings of dead grass with an eye of healthy turf in the middle of each ring. The biggest causes are compacted soil and thatch. Brown patch. Lawns develop somewhat circular patches of dead grass that can be several inches to several feet across. They often seem to have a dark halo around them in the morning. Biggest causes? Overfeeding, especially with quick-release high-nitrogen chemical fertilizers, feeding a cool-season grass anything in the summertime, thatch, overwatering, and evening watering. And finally, the snow molds. Pink snow mold first appears as yellowish-green spots after the winter snows melt. Then the spots change to a pinkish hue. Biggest cause? Excessive fertilizer use in the fall. Gray snow mold also starts out yellowish-green, then turns grayish-white as the grass becomes covered with the mycelia of the fungus responsible. Biggest causes? Overfeeding in the fall, letting leaves lay on the lawn over winter, and our old friend thatch. Notice any patterns here? Although all of these turf diseases are caused by specific fungal organisms, you can look them up via their common names. It's going to be much better on you than listening to me badly mispronounce them here. Be assured that each hard-to-spell organism is everywhere in your environment. The only real way to prevent them is to have a strong lawn. Now, thatch is clearly the major reoccurring villain here. You can largely avoid thatch and save money by not overfeeding your lawn. Using a mulching mower to pulverize the clippings back into your turf will actually help break down thatch, not cause it, as many people suspect. If you have a type of grass like zoysia that easily builds up thatch, use a power dethatcher or a specialized rake to remove some of those dead stolons. Dethatch cool season lawns in the fall, warm season ones in the spring. Compacted soil is another huge reason that turf grasses fall prey to neighborhood fungi. If your lawn drains poorly and/or gets a lot of foot traffic, rent a machine called a core aerator and use it to pull plugs from the soil and thus reduce the compaction. Aerate cool season lawns in the fall warm season ones in the spring. In addition, never water your lawn in the evening. A wet turf overnight is an engraved invitation to felonious fungal spores. Feed your lawn correctly. That's one feeding each in spring and fall for cool season grasses, spring and summer for warm season grasses. And don't ever use high nitrogen quick release fertilizers. These nasty chemicals make lawns very attractive to nasty actors. Use organic fertilizers. Their slow release nutrients will help keep your turf well fed without making it sick. Well, that sure was a hopefully helpful look at the causes and cures of patches and circles in your lawn now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read any of them in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to power rake my thatch if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Put the actual subject of your email in the subject line of your email. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. The well-aerated Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Patchy Al Banks is our editor. I'm thatched, aerated, well-fed, and underpaid Mike McGrath. And I'll see you next week. The kids are back in school, and that means peace, quiet, and garlic planting time. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to grow the best-looking garlic on the block, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mike genially and jocularly helps us on our journey to terrific jonquils, jasmine, geraniums, and more. Join us for You Bet Your Garden.